Okay, guys, the next few episodes are going to be a little bit out of the norm. We aren't going to use our regular formula of calling out a killer or a kidnapper at a time. I mean, we're going to name a few, you know, the ones who managed to get caught, but we're using them as an example as to what to look for with the whole mini-series we've put together. You'll figure out what I mean here in a sec. To quote directly from ncjrs.gov, each year, an estimated 600,000 to 800,000 men, women, and children are trafficked across international borders. Some international and non-governmental organizations place this number far higher, and the trade is growing. Of the 600,000 to 800,000 people trafficked across international borders each year, 70% are female, and 50% of the overall total are children. The majority of these victims are forced into commercial sex trade. Each year, an estimated 14,500 to 17,500 foreign nationals are trafficked into the United States. The number of U.S. citizens trafficked within this country each year is even higher, with an estimated 200,000 American children at risk for trafficking into the sex industry. The largest number of people trafficked into the United States come from East Asia and the Pacific, which is about 5,000 to 7,000 victims. The next highest number come from Latin America and from Europe and Eurasia, with between 3,500 and 5,500 victims from each. So, as I'm sure you guys can guess from that snippet, we're going to touch on a couple of individuals who got caught in the child sex slavery organization. But we're also going to discuss statistics and circumstances that put a person at higher risk, what to look out for, etc. So, for this episode and the two to follow, we're covering human trafficking. This is a current crime being committed by an unknown number of criminals all the time, and the only way that we can finally put an end to it is to talk about it and get the information to reach as far and wide as we can individually and to keep our eyes peeled and our ears open. And I want to thank our friend Ramanda for sharing information on social media and ultimately lighting that fire under our butts to make these episodes. So thank you for not being complacent and complicit in how the world treats children. But welcome back. And if you're here for the first time, welcome to Crime in Theory, a podcast dedicated to everything outside the parameters of normal. We are your hosts, Ashley.
And Aaron. Ah, there I am. You guys all were wondering where I was.
Yeah, that's what they do. Every episode, they sit in anticipation for your voice.
Yep.
I mean, that's what I do every day of my life. I'm just like, fill the void, Aaron. Come on, speak to me.
Now, before we get started, first off, I have to say, oh, wow, those are some big numbers.
Absolutely.
And it absolutely blows my mind that this many people a year go missing.
Not necessarily missing. Those are people sold into sex slavery and sex trafficking, or human trafficking as well. But not every person that gets sold or used in sex trafficking is technically a missing person. And I'll touch on that in one of these episodes. I can't remember exactly where I put it.
Oh, wow.
But a lot of people are missing. Don't get me wrong.
Right.
You're right about that. But some of these people are victims of their own friends, family, neighbors, and they sleep in their own same bed every night.
That's even more terrifying.
I think it's about equally as terrifying.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, across the line, it's all pretty much
terrible.
Yeah.
No, I agree. Guys, if you hear me sniffling over the next three episodes, I'm not sick. I promise. If you are new here, allergies are my biggest issue in life. Besides sex trafficking, obviously. I mean, like, my own personal issues. Okay.
It's still the season for sneezing.
I'm telling you right now, I should just have an entire spring wardrobe dedicated to a quote, "'Tis the season for the sneezing." So, before we get started, how was your week?
It was pretty good.
You started a new D&D campaign.
Yes. Having a blast.
Well, I'm glad, because your dungeon master is a little bit concerned.
Why would you be concerned?
I can't tell you. I have so many secrets.
No, I'm just stressed out about, like, keeping the story straight and letting you guys free roam and everything.
And this is your first time being a DM.
Yeah, so my plan from the get-go has been to roll with the chaos, and it's worked out pretty well. We've done 2 sessions now, and that philosophy has not let me down.
No one's died yet.
Emphasis on the yet.
Da, da, da.
I mean, I don't know what you guys are going to do. I'm just saying you could always die in the game.
That's true.
But you had a good week?
Yeah, it's pretty good.
Good. I don't want to spend too much time, you know, in the intro chit-chatting. So yeah. I'm going to go ahead and persevere. Push into this.
The darkness.
Guys, if you are struggling or if you are easily triggered by sexual assault, sexual sadism, any of the above, maybe this isn't the best episode or series for you to listen to right now. So follow us on Instagram. Keep track of when we're going to be done. I promise it's only 3 episodes. I've already written all the scripts. But if you can handle this, I advise that you do listen. So maybe one day you can help somebody else. And if you hear snorting, that's our dog. So with that being said, I've already told you guys what these episodes are going to be about. So without further ado, let's get started. Sources for this week's episode are FBI.gov, BusinessInsider.com, USAtoday.com, CNN.com, TownAndCountryMag.com, which is weird, FilmDaily.co, CBSNews.com, NYPost.com, and TheConversation.com. We figured that if we're going to talk about human trafficking, we may as well start with the biggest case in the last couple of years. And that is the Jeffrey Epstein case. So I'm going to prelude that with a little bit of information, and then we'll start talking about that freak. The people that I will be naming that were at one time or another part of his inner circle or his friends is not political for us in any way, because as you'll see, any politicians involved are for any party. It's not a bash at Democrats or Republicans. It's just simple fact and has nothing to do with opinion. And one of the other people we'll be talking about has nothing to do with the British monarchy. We're not trying to bash on that at all either. So just grit your teeth. We'll get through this together. And if you don't like these facts, take it up with the individuals involved, because there's nothing we can really do about that. Also, if we go missing or wind up dead, I don't know why we would when this is public information, but even if it looks like an accident, it isn't.
It never is. Tell our story.
My advice is hire a private investigator. Don't get the government involved. Now, I'm not exactly certain when sex trafficking became a topic of concern in general, like for the people in the United States in the first place, but according to FBI.gov, it was in May of 1993 when the FBI really had their eyes open. That was when an unnamed 10-year-old boy went missing from his home in Brentwood, Maryland. Just a heads up, but the story doesn't have a very nice ending. However, within weeks of the investigation, it led to the discovery of 2 male pedophiles, which then led to a discovery of an online ring of child pornographers. Within 2 years, this case kicked off a major national initiative that basically became the centerpiece for the FBI's efforts to stop online predators in their tracks. Because that's the thing, sex trafficking, sexual predators, it's not just snatching kids out of their front yard necessarily, it's online too.
So they don't necessarily need the child themselves. What do they do? Just like snoop around and take photos of children?
No, they'll sometimes kidnap children, or if it may be the parent or an uncle or an aunt or, you know, family member in general, but
they take pornographic photos and footage and post it online to sell to other pedophiles.
Oh, okay. So now I'm starting to understand what you're saying. Like, they don't necessarily need to be snatched up if the predator is part of the family.
Right. Or neighborhood. It could be a trusted family friend.
Yeah. Mm.
The FBI will typically investigate a missing child case without question if the child is under the age of 12, according to what I found online from the FBI. So when they started investigating and they began questioning neighbors, they found out that these neighbors had encountered a pair of suspicious men who had been, quote unquote, befriending kids around the neighborhood, showering them with gifts, and even taking them on vacation.
Wow.
Which means that they had to gain the parents' trust.
Yeah.
That's so unsettling. It's so gross. The FBI found out that these men had been sexually abusing children for the last 25 years. That's a quarter century. The two men had recently moved online because this is the 90s. Internet is slowly becoming a thing. And they set up private computer bulletin boards. They wouldn't only use these bulletin boards to quote-unquote chat with underage boys to set up meetings with them, but they would also share images of child pornography with a larger ring of pedophiles. Thankfully, the two men were eventually arrested and convicted of abusing kids, but there was never any evidence actually linking them to the disappearance of that 10-year-old boy. Agents called every FBI office in the country to see how widespread this illicit behavior was. What the FBI found was that numerous complaints had been filed nationwide by parents who were offended by pornographic images and unsolicited, disgusting, and obscene emails that had been sent right to their private inboxes. They then consulted experts who tracked this behavior, and the experts confirmed that sexual exploitation of children via computers was indeed a national trend, which of course we know now.
Right.
But back then when the internet was kind of in its baby stage, even then it was a problem.
Wait, so what you're saying is these, I'm just going to call them what they are, sickos.
Sure.
Would send just random people emails with this stuff in it?
I'm assuming.
Like, hoping it would be like a join our sick freak group?
I'm assuming. I don't know.
Man.
I don't know because thankfully I was raised right.
Yeah.
And I try to treat people as well as I can. And I don't have a sick mentality to understand this kind of behavior. And neither do you. So there are some things that we're never going to understand, no matter how much we research this stuff. In September of 1994, agents opened a new case that came to be called, quote, Operation Innocent Images, end quote. They brought in more agents and support staff to work this case. They had to work under the guidelines, very strict guidelines, mind you, in order to make things stick, you know, legally. But agents would pose undercover as children online to bait these disgusting excuses for human beings. They engaged in chat with suspects and sometimes posed as consumers themselves to child pornography peddlers. I don't think the agents were mentally prepared for the things that they had to encounter. Between the graphic images and the nature of the messages that flashed across their screens, agents were left stunned and appalled. By the summer of 1995, the Bureau had enough evidence to go public with this case. They executed over 100 search warrants simultaneously across the nation.
Wow.
Thanks to this investigation, the Federal Bureau of Investigation itself formally launched the Innocent Images National Initiative in order to crack down on illicit activity conducted through both commercial and private online services. The initiative is now part of the Violent Crimes Against Children Unit, and its mission became broader as time went on. It now also aims to break up entire networks/communities of online pedophiles and to take down major distributors and producers of child pornography. It aims to catch those who view and share illicit images and video and to stop sexual predators from using the internet to lure children away from their families. Which is great.
Yeah.
However, sadly, it's not enough.
Since September of 2004, the FBI has also been running the Violent Crimes Against Children International Task Force, which is made up of international investigators who work side by side with FBI agents to fight child exploitation on an international level. Again, it is a great concept. But I want you to remember the numbers that I gave you earlier. In the last 13 years, the FBI has opened more than 20,000 cases, but every year they estimate 200,000 children are being trafficked or susceptible to trafficking in the United States, which has led to more than 6,800 convictions, again, which is great, but it feels like a very small dent.
Right. It's to me, it sounds like it's happening faster than they can
keep up.
Yeah.
Right. So there are other organizations that aim to help increase the number of arrests and stop pedophiles and traffickers in their tracks, which is great. I'm sorry, that was our dog, if you hear him. But still, it seems like a very small portion of people are trying to stop this in comparison to people actually involved with the criminal activity itself. So any bit that they put away, it feels like a hydra. They cut off one head and two spring back in its place.
Yeah, this is a very uphill battle.
But in my opinion, it doesn't have to be. That's why we're making these episodes, and that's why hopefully more people are making episodes and posting on social media and actually keeping their eyes peeled when they're out in public.
Right.
Because here's the thing. I fully agree that we need to be wearing masks because of COVID, but masks bring anonymity, which sucks when it comes to criminal activity.
You have a point.
So that's a big worry of mine. I mean, I have nothing to actually back that assumption up, but it's a possibility. You look really upset.
Yeah, it's just bringing back some thoughts from childhood, because I can remember like three people. Well, not just three people, but...
That daycare?
Yeah, that daycare.
Let's not say any names or anything, because we don't want to get sued, but also we don't want to give away where we live.
Yeah. But there was a daycare that I went to as a child. It was like one of those ones where you drop your kids off, and the daycare is also a place for after school where your kids can hang out until the parents come to pick them
daycare.
Up. Daycare. Yeah, yeah.
It's just a daycare.
And it was run by in two shifts, obviously. I was fortunate enough to be going to this daycare when
the person in question
wasn't there, and I only knew this because later in my life my mom asked me if I was ever touched.
Well, it broke on the news before she asked you.
But I didn't know exactly what daycare it was, because I didn't really pay attention to the news at that time.
Or the names of the daycares you even went to be honest. Yeah. You were a kid. Why would you?
But she brought it up, and I was like, no, I was never touched or anything. And but I was like, but why?
It was the man involved, right?
Yeah, that he was the husband.
It was the husband. So it was a husband and wife who owned it.
Yeah.
And the husband was taking inappropriate liberties with the children.
Yeah.
So it literally happens in your own backyard.
Yeah. And then I want to say we even had a teacher.
We did.
Yeah.
I don't even remember his name.
I don't either.
But I do remember on my 16th birthday, I went to the movies, and guess who walked in?
No.
This was after his arrest. Him and his wife came in.
Wow.
So he had made bail.
Yeah.
But he shouldn't have been there, because there are kids at movies.
Yeah. And then there was this other boy that I knew growing up in school, and I never saw him again.
He was talking to someone online, wasn't he?
Yep. And then that was it.
So, I mean, I understand that teens and kids want privacy, especially as they're growing into independent people.
Yeah.
But parents, please monitor your children. If they start acting off, even in the slightest, don't make them feel bad or guilty if something happens. They're the child. They're the victim in this. Let them know that they can trust you, and do your best to get them to open up to you and be as open and transparent with you as possible.
And I hope this, you know, goes to show Like, we're just two people and we've had this many run-ins with these situations.
Yeah. So, and we live in a small town and it's relatively a very
like everybody
nice place.
Knows everybody kind of thing. Close
right.
enough.
But it's also a pretty nice place to live. Like, people are really friendly here.
Yeah.
But friendly faces don't mean that they're not harboring some dark, dirty secret. So just be careful who you trust, guys.
But I'm sorry to kind of swing left field on this while you had to talk about.
No, that wasn't left field at all. That's completely relevant with what we're talking about. We're showing people that where you least expect it, it can still happen.
Yeah.
But if anyone's wondering what happened to the boy that had been kidnapped, sadly, he was never found. And here's what gets to me. And I'm sorry if I get angry or uppity about this whole thing, because I'm here to deliver the facts, not opinions. However, I'm still a person, and this is one of the things that hits deep. What really gets to me is how people can actually see children being trafficked or children being harmed in some way and decide that they don't want to bother with it. They don't want to get involved. It's a child's life at stake. How can you not want to be involved? And I also understand that sometimes you see something, it doesn't quite sit right with you, and you don't quite understand what you're seeing until it's too late. And you might be thinking to yourself, well, it's probably nothing, so I'm not going to get involved. I don't want to involve the police in somebody's life if it turns out to be nothing. But I would rather have someone involved in a case like this and find out that I'm wrong than to not get involved and have a child wind up dead or an accomplice in sex trafficking themselves as they get older.
Most
definitely. Or a sex trafficker in general.
Yeah.
So this episode might not exactly flow together quite well because I led with the whole FBI thing and now we're getting ready to jump into the Epstein case. But here we are. I'm all over the board. But you know what? Sex trafficking rings are all over the board. So let's just jump into the Epstein case now. Okay?
Ready?
Perfect. The Epstein case is one of those cases where people did literally see children being trafficked and they didn't say or do anything. They allowed Epstein to continue to be a monster.
Oh, so people that could have stopped it just let it happen.
Or at least could have done their part. I can't guarantee it would have been stopped sooner.
Right.
But yeah, and I'll explain why when I get to it, but I'm going to try to stick to script. You don't really know a whole lot about the Epstein case, do you, Aaron?
No.
You just know that he got in trouble for sex trafficking and he did or did not kill himself in jail.
Yeah. Okay. And now it was like, what is it, his wife or something?
His ex-girlfriend, Ghislaine Maxwell.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I'm going to tear the guy a new one. I don't care that he's dead. And if somebody out there is thinking, Ashley, you should at least respect the deceased. No. I'll respect people who deserve it. Jeffrey Edward Epstein was born on January 20th, 1953 in Brooklyn, New York. Not that it really matters. He started his career off as a math teacher in New York City at the Dalton School. And now that we know what we know, we all see how gross that is, right?
Yeah.
Now, I don't know if the Dalton School was a boys' school or what, but if it was a boys' school, he may have been conditioning them to also be predators. Who knows? And if it was co-ed, then ew. And at some point in the 1970s, he went to work at an investment bank called Bear Stearns, I believe, before he went on to start his own firm called J. Epstein & Co. in 1982. According to VOX, he specifically marketed his services to, quote, those with assets more than $1 billion, end quote.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. And operated his company out of the United States Virgin Islands for tax reasons. He appeared to be wealthy by living in a massive townhouse, and he would give large lumps of cash to a wide variety of causes and institutions. But here's the thing. Nobody really knows where his money came from.
Suspicious money.
I'm gonna call it like I see it. He's shady. Shady individual. I mean, this is just
my guess, I don't know, but basically it seems like he kind of invented a whole identity of being some rich guy and played the game like he had cash, convincing rich people to invest in him, and he would turn that cash into larger sums, building his own fortune along the way. That's my guess. Like, it feels kind of like how a Ponzi scheme works, except yeah. He actually turned profit instead of taking the money and running.
Right.
So as he gained more finances and branched out in his investments, he attracted the attention of a plethora of the rich and socially elite. According to Business Insider, besides former L Brand CEO Les Wexner, which is kind of he's the CEO of the company that owns Victoria's Secret.
What?
Or was. He's not anymore. I still have opinions on Victoria's Secret that I'll keep to myself. And besides his connection to Ghislaine Maxwell, who was a socialite, which have both been confirmed in being part of his inner circle, other names that crossed paths with Epstein were Donald Trump, who at the time claimed to be friends with him, Bill Clinton, who traveled on Epstein's private plane, Kevin Spacey and Chris Tucker, who took trips with him, and I think we all know about the sexual misconduct allegations against Kevin Spacey that ultimately led to him, being let go from Netflix's House of Cards, so there's that. Prince Andrew, who was close friends with Epstein, and he has never denied his friendship with Epstein, and they met through Ghislaine Maxwell, I'll touch on that in a little bit. But this whole case has basically caused Prince Andrew to step down from his title, again, which I'll explain in a bit. MIT Media Lab director Joy Ito has also been connected to him because he worked quietly with him to secure anonymous donations. Apparently, Epstein was a go-between for him and Bill Gates, and he would arrange donations. Epstein even told the New York Times that he had even advised Elon Musk at one point. And this is honestly just kind of the tip of the iceberg with his celebrity connections.
I was about to say, those are some really big namey names.
And powerful ones, too.
Yeah.
I mean, we have, I'm going to use the term leader loosely, but we have, leaders of companies.
Yeah.
And countries and
actors and
but here's the thing. Remember, Epstein wasn't arrested until 2019, right?
Right.
Back in 2007, while we were still in school, Epstein was arrested in Florida and charged with solicitation of prostitution, that's the article's words, and procurement of minors for prostitution. When this happened, the former Secretary of Labor, Alexander Acosta, worked with Epstein's legal team to arrange a plea deal. In 2008, Epstein pleaded guilty to these charges, and all he got was 18 months in jail, even though there was clear intent of him sexually abusing minors.
Wow.
It gets worse than that. He never served the full 18 months.
What did he do, just pay his way out or something?
I don't know. So what happened was he was granted work release after 13 months, which let him leave the jail 6 days a week so he could go to work like a regular, unmarred citizen. This guy literally tried to pay money to essentially rape a minor, and that's all he got was a slap on the wrist.
Wow.
Which says that our justice system is beyond faulty. Like, I don't care if it was statutory rape or forced rape or whatever. It doesn't matter. Rape is rape. And this guy, all he had to do was serve 13 months. That's barely over a year of his life.
Yeah.
It's disgusting. He, of course, had to register as a sex offender because once you are convicted as that, you have to register.
It's on your permanent record.
Yeah, literally. But it didn't seem to stop his inner circle from welcoming him back with open arms. This douche felt like he was untouchable when it came to the law. And look, I'm just going to go ahead and jump to the whole island Epstein Island thing, because his face disgusts me and I couldn't stand to look at articles anymore with his face on them because I just wanted to punch him. And I know he's dead. I know he's dead. Still want to punch him in his doughy old creeper face. Guys, I promise I don't judge people based on their looks unless they're a disgusting pedophile. So what he would do is he would take underage girls to his island called Little St. James. I believe he owned two islands, by the way. One for business, one for, I'm not going to say pleasure. That's disgusting.
No.
One for criminal activity. There we go.
Yeah,
there we go.
Because that's really what it is.
Yeah. So does anyone else want to guess what Little St. James Island went by? Aaron, do you have any guesses?
Can't really think of anything off the top of my head.
How about Island of Sin?
Ah.
Orgy Island. Or my personal favorite, because it's the most fitting, Pedophile Island.
I have no words.
This island was literally set up to make it difficult to leave. He kept the girls trapped there, and they couldn't leave until he said so. It was isolated from the rest of the Virgin Islands, and there were only two real ways to leave. By helicopter or by private boat.
So once you're on there, you're stuck.
Yep.
And now my question is, he had to have some kind of, not a police force, but some kind of hired bodyguards to...
He had hired help.
Hmm.
He would confiscate passports and he would terminate any and all communication that his victims may have had with the outside world. One of his survivors actually tried to escape, and she tried by swimming away. But Epstein found her, quote-unquote, almost immediately. The survivor recounted that she figured she was under 24/7 surveillance. A former employee of Jeffrey Epstein's, named Stephen Scully, was hired to install a private cell network for Epstein, so communication on the island, but only on the island.
Wow.
Stephen said, quote, privacy was very important to Jeffrey Epstein, end quote. Yeah, I wonder why. And if any of the survivors or any of the witnesses did try to get authorities involved, Epstein would never allow authorities to step foot on his island. U.S. Virgin Islands Attorney General Denise George actually recounted that officers would be stopped as soon as they reached the docks and that they would be told that Little St. James was private property and they had no right to be there.
Wait, so they couldn't get a search warrant?
I don't know. I think you have to have evidence for a search warrant, and he kept all the evidence confined on that island.
Wow.
What Epstein would do to get his victims there was especially sneaky. He had stakes in multiple businesses. As we know, he was an investor. And one of those investments was in a company called Hyperion or Hyperion Air. He would use the company's helicopters to hide his identity and have them flown out from Cyril E. King Airport to his island under the guise of anonymity. But he also made sure to use his own private jets, I'm guessing for business reasons, for people to keep track. And he would use these when he had people flying with him. And as we know, they were people of high status. And I really don't want to say this because I don't mean this as a compliment, okay? But he was clever about keeping his disgusting deeds hidden and keeping everyone distracted with his other actions, like his business. So when he was flying these girls to the island, people would see these girls get off the helicopters, like physically with their own eyeballs, see these girls come off the choppers, and they were clearly underage. I read one article saying that his youngest victim was 14 and another article saying that his youngest was 12.
Wow.
But either way, they were super young. And let's also keep in mind that this guy was still a sex offender leaving the country with young girls.
So he had business clients on that island.
I don't know about business clients. What do you say?
I just wanted to make sure, like, what?
Like I said, I think he had two different islands, but I'm talking about
that's right.
Young girls coming off the helicopters to go to Pedophile Island.
That's right. I almost forgot that he has... like you said, he had two islands. So one island was for to keep the business people.
From my understanding, but illicit activity went on there too, and I'll touch on that in a second.
Jeez.
There's at least one victim account of something that happened on that one. But all I have to say is, I mean, you let a pedophile get on a helicopter with underage girls, and you let him fly away from home. He never told anyone where he was going, which as a sex offender, he was supposed to do. And nobody ever did anything about it. Way to go. Way to go, dear justice system. You've really done a bang-up job. He also would violate his probation by going to hotels and traveling on these helicopters, like I said, without telling anyone. But the hotel thing is what I forgot to say earlier. Sorry.
So no one really keeping tabs on this guy?
Nope. Or if they were, they just swept it under the rug. Some of the airport staff had actually reported on how often they saw Epstein with girls who were clearly underage. One of the survivors said that Epstein was welcomed by authorities when he would arrive on the island.
Okay, so that's helping explain.
Yeah.
He just had people on the inside.
Which also explains how here on the mainland that he was able to get away with so much too. Supposedly, Epstein had made numerous donations to the U.S. Virgin Islands government officials. One former employee said that he remained complicit because he just, not an Epstein employee, the airport employee, I believe, said that he remained complicit because he just figured authorities were doing their jobs. So, rule number 512, never assume anything.
Yep.
And I really don't care how many people you think have spoken up about injustice. Like, what are you going to do? Push police to do their job? We need people to stop worrying about bothering people when there are other people's safety in question here. And I'm not pinpointing anybody when I say this. I'm saying we all need to open our eyes and be more observant and stop caring about if we're bothering detectives in investigating a crime.
I mean, that's their job. I mean, that's what they signed up for, to help stop these things.
Yeah, even if you want to get a private investigator involved, like, do it. I would rather assume the worst and find out I was wrong than assume the best and find out I was wrong.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't want to go jump in the gun either and say, oh, well, that guy seems a little shady. He must be a pedophile. But at the same time, what if he is? Like, if you see little Susie coming in with bruises on her legs and wrists, you might want to question that. And also, before I tick off the wrong people, when I say I would rather see a suspected crime get reported and find out that I'm wrong, I mean a suspected real crime, not some innocent person walking home wearing a hoodie at night, okay? I don't mean that. That's not suspicious. That's not criminal. I mean, if you see kids who are physically coming into your area of view and they are physically hurt, especially on a regular basis, you need to question it because kids can't help themselves.
No.
Even teens, like, they have a little more of a voice than a small child, but really, how big is their voice? We try to silence the young all the time. Speak when spoken to. Be quiet. You're bothering us.
Can I add a little story? Speaking of situations like this.
Sure, of course.
I won't give her name, but one person I know had told me when they got home that they saw a poor little boy walking the road with no clothes on. And instead of assuming that someone was reporting this, she got in touch with the police. And
that's the right thing to do. Because again, that's a kid.
Yeah.
He can't do it for himself because he was small, right?
Yeah. I mean, it was a little child.
Like, not every kid is even old enough to understand what 911 is.
Yeah. She just wanted to make sure, you know, whatever was going on in that child's home,
that he was safe.
Yeah.
Right. And that's the right thing to do. Later, it came out that Chief William Harvey of the Virgin Islands claimed he had never even heard of Epstein.
What?
Which means that if any authorities actually did go out there, they never reported it to higher-ups. Nobody ever did anything.
So I guess when authorities were turned away, I don't know if they put their tail between their legs or if they just didn't think it was worth their time. I don't know. And if there's anyone out there thinking, well, what if the victims were 17? That's so close to 18. He shouldn't have been punished that much. First of all, I have more faith in our listeners than that. But on the off chance that some dipstick comes along and has that thought, let me explain something. Anyone under the age of 18 being sold or selling themselves for sex is still considered victims of sex trafficking by U.S. law. So I don't care if they're 17 and 364 days. They are still a victim of sex trafficking.
And I mean, also, I'm just going to say this. If you got snatched up, regardless of what age you are, you would want someone to report it, right?
Amen. Epstein was arrested on July 6th, 2019, so just over 13 months ago by the time we're recording. And he was charged on July 8th, 2019 on charges of sex trafficking of a minor and conspiracy to engage in sex trafficking. The indictment says, quote, over the course of many years, Jeffrey Epstein, the defendant, sexually exploited and abused dozens of minor girls at his homes in Manhattan, New York, and Palm Beach, Florida, among other locations, which we now know included Epstein Island. I just call it Epstein Island. I know it's not the actual name. Whatever. The indictment continued, quote, in order to maintain and increase his supply of victims, Epstein also paid certain of his victims to recruit additional girls to be similarly abused, end quote. And that right there, how he got other girls to recruit, that's actually a sign of sex trafficking. A trafficker will, a lot of the time, send out their victims to recruit more because it's easier for people to trust someone their own age. They are more apt to let their guard down and agree to go with them.
What, so he conditioned them?
I don't know that it's necessarily conditioning. In some cases, it might be. I'm not throwing your conclusion under the bus right by any means. But for a lot of people, people go into survival mode. When they're treated like animals, they go into an animalistic survival mode. I'm not saying people are animals. I'm just saying that they were so abused that, mentally speaking, to comply is to guarantee your own safety.
Like maybe he made some quote-unquote deals. If you collect these so many people, your life might get quote unquote a little
better. Yeah, maybe. I don't know exactly how it went down, obviously.
Either way, yeah, it's still messed up.
It's very messed up. And we can't exactly blame the kids because, and that's what they are, they were kids. We can't exactly blame them for recruiting more because, again, it was survival. And after all of this came to light, one of his survivors spoke up in an interview. She decided to remain anonymous, but her words were enough. She said, quote, he raped me. He brought me off the island to his office in St. Thomas, where he actually raped me in his office. He also trapped me in his bedroom on the island where he had a gun strapped to the bedpost. I couldn't leave. The only means of getting off the island was either helicopter or boat, end quote.
Jeez.
Which kind of feeds my theory of survival. If he had a gun strapped to the bedpost, then their lives were in danger.
My word, did he ever kill anyone?
I don't know. I feel like Epstein was too much of a coward. He probably had other people do it if anyone actually died under his order.
Right.
But I don't know. Everything I'm saying is merely assumption. There's a lot that we'll never know because he's dead.
Yeah.
And I don't know exactly how much Ghislaine Maxwell is going to give up if she survives. Because I also have my concerns about how long she's going to last.
Understandably so.
Epstein reportedly had a network of more than 50 victims. The evidence against him included hundreds of pornographic photographs of girls and young women. On July 24th, 2019, Epstein was found, quote-unquote, injured in his cell, and a couple of weeks later, on August 10th, he was found dead. The official ruling was a suicide. The official FBI statement was, quote, "On Saturday, August 10th, 2019, at approximately 6:30 a.m., inmate Jeffrey Edward Epstein was found unresponsive in his cell in the special housing unit from an apparent suicide at the Metropolitan Correctional Center in New York, New York. Life-saving measures were initiated immediately by responding staff. Staff requested emergency medical services and life-saving efforts continued. Mr. Epstein was transported by EMS, which is Emergency Medical Services, to a local hospital for treatment of his life-threatening injuries and subsequently pronounced dead by hospital staff. The FBI is investigating the incident." On October 30th last year, a forensic pathologist who had been hired by Epstein's brother Mark said he believed that Epstein was murdered and did not die by suicide. This, of course, already fed into conspiracy theories that Epstein didn't kill himself. Dr. Michael Bowden said that Epstein experienced a number of injuries that, quote, "are extremely unusual in suicidal hangings and could occur much more commonly in homicidal strangulation," end quote, when he spoke out on morning show Fox and Friends. Of course, the city's chief ME, Dr. Barbara Sampson, stuck with her original conclusion of suicide. But suicide or murder, it still left a lot of open questions. There was no way Epstein could have run this sex trafficking ring all by himself. I don't care how clever he was.
And I'm just going to say this, just from what you gave me with that, all that, to me, it sounds like when they walked in and found him, he was still alive, but just hanging
barely
on.
Maybe.
Because they attempted to resuscitate. I mean, well, you're not going to try to resuscitate a dead guy.
Well, we don't know how long he was there. He could have actually been dead. You have to officially be pronounced dead by a doctor.
Okay. But they, to me, it sounds like they assumed enough that somehow taking him to the hospital was going to help.
Well, I mean, that's where doctors are. I know that they probably have a medical ward in the jail, of course, but I think that's more for, like, the common cold. Yeah. I don't think they had much of a choice but to transport him either way. And hospitals are where morgues typically are located.
Like, to me, I don't know, it kind of sounds like the guys that came in to, quote-unquote, help him from dying helped him on his way to die.
But he could have seriously already been dead. It's right. Their job to try to revive. There was no telling how long he was dead if he was already dead when they got in the cell. Right. Their job was to try to revive him. He might not have been barely hanging on. He could have already left his body, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, absolutely.
So that theory, I mean, I always feel like I'm trying to crush your theories. I'm sorry.
No, you're fine.
But I genuinely don't think that's the case.
Right.
Because think about this. EMS was not involved. Or emergency anything was not involved a couple weeks prior when he had sustained those injuries in his cell. So if it was gonna be an inside job, my guess is staff, like COs and stuff, or other prisoners that were paid by an outside member of Jeffrey Epstein's circle. That's just my guess. I think it goes much bigger than just EMS. Like,
I was just saying, these EMS guys could be in disguise.
It's not Hollywood.
Yeah, I mean, I know it's not Hollywood, but like, they could have been.
No, honey, I just don't think so. I'm sorry. I mean, it's not out of the realm of possibility. Anything's possible in this world. I mean, it's, you know, completely possible we're living in a simulation. Who knows? But I just feel like it, usually the simplest answer is the right one. Somebody in the jail, whether it was a CEO or a fellow prisoner, was probably paid off to do a number on Epstein. If he didn't kill himself.
Right.
He could have just genuinely killed himself because he was a coward. Not that all people who kill themselves are cowards. I'm saying that he was a criminal who didn't want to face up to what he did. Okay, let me just... I feel like I always have to clarify or everybody's going to assume, oh, people, all people who kill themselves are cowards. That's what she said. No, it is not.
I gotcha.
I'm sorry, though. No, like, I feel like I'm always trying to crush... It's the Ravenclaw in me. I'm just like, let's look at it logically.
I don't know. I guess logically. My mind was like going into, what was this video game? Hitman.
Where, exactly. That's a video game.
Yeah.
That's for entertainment purposes.
I gotcha.
On July 2nd of this year, so just over a month ago, Epstein's former girlfriend, Ghislaine Maxwell, was arrested on a 6-count indictment of grooming young girls for sexual predators. According to documents released on July 30th, like, feels like yesterday, Epstein and Maxwell allegedly hosted orgies with these young girls, which I guess fills the name of Orgy Island, huh?
Hmm.
Maxwell would partake in quote-unquote constant orgies with girls, according to survivor Virginia, please forgive me, I cannot say her last name, Giuffre. And according to Virginia, she had been trafficked to powerful men for blackmail. Well, that could explain where some of the money came from.
Makes sense.
She was able to describe what Maxwell looked like naked, adding to the veracity of her testimony. And I'm not going to go into detail because you can find all the information online. She did say, though, that there were no distinct markings on her body that could definitively say that it was Ghislaine Maxwell, but she still described what she looked like naked, so all you have to do is compare. There were also claims from federal prosecutors that they unearthed a series of unusual financial transactions. Other than nobody really knowing where the money was coming from to finance lavish lifestyles that fit in with the billionaire bankers and society figures that they ran with, federal prosecutors disclosed that starting in 2007, for a total of 5 years, Maxwell and Epstein exchanged more than $20 million between their accounts. The whole thing is legitimately wild. Like, you guys need to look into that. It's crazy.
Boy, howdy, that's a lot of money.
That is a lot of money. But I don't care how much money it is. It's not the kind of money I want to obtain.
Mm-mm, not that dirty money.
Nope. And according to documents released on July 30th, Prince Andrew allegedly lobbied for leniency on Epstein. He had been accused by at least one of Epstein's victims as having partook in pedophilic behavior as well. Now, the royal family and representatives of the royal family have all denied these claims, and Prince Andrew himself. And let's say he didn't partake, and it was just a case of mistaken identity. If he lobbied for leniency for Epstein, that still says he's not a good judge of character or just good judge of anything, ever. Because he knew that Epstein was a convicted sex offender, and he still lobbied for leniency for harming all of these people, if he indeed did it. This is just what was released. Now, we as humans need to hold our friends to higher standards than that.
Yeah, most definitely.
You don't need to fight for them to have the justice system go easy on them if they've done horrific crimes, and you know that they have. I mean, here's the thing. You find out your friend is a monster in human flesh. If you're not punching them in the face and reporting them, then you're not really their friend. There we go, I said it. Because if you know something that is being done that is wrong and you do nothing about it, or if you help, you're just as guilty. American prosecutors have reached out to Prince Andrew numerous times, allegedly, trying to gain his assistance in getting this case completely solved. According to a statement made by Andrew, he is willing to help. But here's the problem. His actions say otherwise.
he basically is kind of hiding out from these American prosecutors. I mean, I get it. COVID-19 is putting a damper on a lot of things. I get that. But he can still pick up a phone. By the time this episode airs, I mean, things may be different. This is a very current case. So things that I'm saying now might not be 100% true by the time they come out. Or by the time this comes out. So if I'm wrong by that point, I'm sorry. But as of right now, which is, what, August something. It's early August. Everything I'm saying is pretty true up to this point. By pretty true, I mean everything's true as far as my knowledge. And Andrew and Epstein met in 1990, thanks to Ghislaine Maxwell, as I said earlier, and they became best buddies. And back in 2010, after Epstein was convicted the first time, Prince Andrew was seen walking around Central Park with Epstein himself, which caused a huge stir, because, I mean, he had already been convicted the first time.
Understandably so.
And a statement from Buckingham Palace about the more recent events involving Epstein said, quote, "The Duke of York has been appalled by the recent reports of Jeffrey Epstein's alleged crimes. His Royal Highness deplores the exploitation of any human being and the suggestion he would condone, participate, or encourage any such behavior is abhorrent." But if you're not encouraging it, why are you trying to get your friend off the hook?
Yeah. I mean, that is kind of, what's the word I'm looking for? Enabling?
Yeah, I think that's the right word. And Andrew said directly, quote, "I continue to unequivocally..." Is that the right word? Unequivocally, I can read sometimes. "Regret my ill-judged association with Jeffrey Epstein. His suicide has left many unanswered questions, particularly for his victims, and I deeply sympathize with everyone who has been affected and wants some form of closure." End quote. But again, if that's the case, why has he not helped?
Yeah.
I mean, I get it. He's kind of under the thumb of the entirety of the royal family, and everything that anyone does that belongs to that family reflects on everyone else, apparently. So there's a lot of stuff going on behind closed doors that they try to snuff out before it gets exposed, I'm sure. But either way. But I don't know. I want answers. I want answers, because this case is huge, and according to statements, like, 50 different girls have been harmed because of all of this crap. And their lives are forever changed and altered, and not in a good way.
And I imagine that's just the ones that we know of.
Exactly. How many people were forced into silence?
Yeah. And I'd hate to say this, like, how many skeletons are hiding?
Oh, dude, that's a good question.
Because, I mean, stuff like this, you know that there's some people that are just... Lost my train of thought.
It's okay. We don't know that there are people who have been killed. We can only assume. And I don't want to assume anything.
I just expect the worst.
I expect the worst too, though. I'm not going to disagree with you on that. Like, is there a possibility there are people who are missing and won't be found because Epstein had their deaths ordered? Possibly.
Yeah. Yeah, that's what I'm trying to say. Like, I mean, an island, I mean, that's plenty of ocean to
that's dump valid. Some bodies. I mean, we don't know, so I'm not going to accuse anyone because, one, that can get you into a lot of legal trouble, and two, I'm a firm believer of, and even if you're not a Christian, this is one of my biggest rules to live by, to not bear false witness.
Right.
There's enough bad going on in the world as it is. I don't want to add to that by accusing people of things that they haven't done. However, I believe that an organization this seedy and this depraved, it's quite possible.
Right. And that's all I'm trying to say.
Like, I got you.
I'm not saying, did they? I can't say for one way or another if they did or not. Possibly?
Anything's possible.
Anything's possible.
Now, I haven't forgotten about the U.S. presidents involved. So, Bill Clinton is alleged to have actually visited the island itself and was witnessed by Virginia,
So she saw him. Clinton denies all involvement with the seedy underbelly of Epstein's dealings. But honestly, who knows? I'm not accusing, because there have been people to visit that island that did not partake and possibly did not know. I mean, Stephen Hawking himself went to that island.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. A spokesperson for Clinton said, quote, President Clinton knows nothing about the terrible crimes Jeffrey Epstein pleaded guilty to in Florida some years ago, or those which he has recently been charged in New York. In 2002 and 2003, President Clinton took a total of 4 trips on Jeffrey Epstein's airplane, 1 to Europe, 1 to Asia, and 2 to Africa, which included stops in connection with the work of the Clinton Foundation, end quote. I mean, again, we don't know. I'm not going to accuse. Bill Clinton has done his own seedy stuff before. Some of us were alive for the Monica Lewinsky incident. But that doesn't mean that he's necessarily a pedophile. He's a cheater, that much we know of.
Right.
And Trump said in 2002, quote, I've known Jeff for 15 years. Terrific guy. Just read this in your head in that voice if you can, or just listen to this in that voice in your head. I'm not going to do an impersonation. He's a lot of fun to be with. It's even said that he likes beautiful women as much as I do, and many of them are on the younger side, end quote. That last sentence disturbs me. And then when Epstein was arrested the last time, which was 2019, so the timing could add up here with what I'm about to say, but I don't know. I feel like Trump just kind of rounds up to 15 years. I feel like that's just his number or something. But he said, quote, I had a falling out with him. I haven't spoken to him in 15 years. I was not a fan of his, that I can tell you, end quote. This is the part that gets me.
And how do you say someone's a great guy, but
and then say you never liked them? Just be consistent. If you don't like someone, you don't like someone. Say that from the get-go.
Absolutely.
That is all for part 1 of 3. Sorry, guys. I know this one didn't have a whole heck of a lot to do with sex trafficking, like, facts and stuff. That is coming next week. But this is Crime in Theory. We also expose criminals. It's a whole thing. But I don't know. Epstein was disgusting, and whoever partook in Epstein's trafficking business is just as disgusting. Looking at you, Ghislaine Maxwell. I'm going to ask for a pat on the back for this, because I only insulted Jeffrey Epstein's name, not name, looks, one time through the whole episode.
Oh, yeah.
So, like, seriously, though, I can't be the only person who thinks that his voice and his face are just gross, right? I can't be the only person. He just, ugh.
Just knowing these facts alone.
Yeah. And none of this came from the, special on Netflix, that Filthy Rich, based on the James Patterson book about Epstein. But I highly advise you go watch that if you can handle it, because it is chock full of information. But I'm gonna wrap this up so we can record the next episode. I hope you guys are spotting some red flags to look for in this episode, and I will go into more detail next week. As I said, please use these episodes as reference. Take notes if you have to. Share these episodes with your friends and family, and not for our sake. I mean, we love having new listeners and everything, but these episodes are for the sake of spreading facts and awareness and keeping the world's children just a little bit safer. Aaron, do you have anything else to say before we go?
I think you pretty much covered. Okay. You know, just keep an eye out on your kids.
So, if that's the case, stay safe this week, guys. If you see something suspicious, don't be complicit in these possible crimes. And as always,
don't get haunted.
We will see you guys next Thursday with part 2.